Thank you, everybody. Thanks for having me here. I'm honored to be here, and I'm excited to do this session with everybody. I think it'll be a great takeoff from what Brian and Howard were talking about this morning and the value we bring to clients. And now, how do we actually take that and implement that in the field on a day-to-day basis with the interactions we all have? Our system's called Wealth Building Cornerstones, and I want you to kind of just take note of the tagline we've trademarked there, Two Economic Powers. That's going to become very prevalent throughout our discussions here today. And what it really represents is that I think in our industry, a lot of the times, the investment industry ends up fighting the insurance industry, and the insurance industry ends up fighting the investment industry. It's like an either-or battle. It never really was meant to be that way. And so what this system does is actually shows how to bring the attributes of both of those worlds together in harmony to actually create the optimal results for the common objective. As we go through this then, just a quick overview of the Wealth Building Cornerstone system. It's a fully comprehensive, simple to use and learn, efficient, repeatable, timeless financial system for advisors that applies to everyone we work with. It's fully scalable. It doesn't matter if I'm working with somebody that's making $50,000 a year or somebody who's making $1 million a year. And the reason I can say that is because we're dealing with the economic powers that govern everybody's lives, not on variables and things like that that can change constantly. With this system, we're always taking a begin with a purpose in mind perspective on things, whether we're talking about in a pre-retiree world, maybe protection and wealth building. We always start with what are we actually trying to accomplish and use that as the basis for understanding what we should be implementing then today. We have to begin here though with understanding that all of us in this room have two types of clients, and they are very distinct and different as to how we have to approach them. We have pre-retirees and retirees. And I think that the industry for a long time now has somewhat lumped these two people together in the same type of planning strategies or the same platforms constantly, which makes it very difficult to understand what we should actually be doing with them from a purpose perspective. And we have to recognize that economically, pre-retirees and retirees have completely different functions of money. If you think about it, a retiree is actually trying to implement their strategies for retirement today. They actually have to choose products that will accomplish their objectives today for the next 30 years. That's much different than a pre-retiree. A pre-retiree isn't trying to implement what they're exactly going to do on the day of retirement. What they're trying to do is try to prepare to have the biggest choices available. You have to have a different way of analyzing both of those scenarios. They're connected, but they're not the same. So our system separates this out into two separate categories, pre-retiree and retiree. We have two different fully developed client processes, meeting by meeting, that list off the steps. I'm not going to go through these in detail right now. They talk about the presentations and the different calculators and what you do at each meeting. So it's very comprehensive all the way through for either a pre-retiree client or a retiree. And all the information for completing those processes, the calculators, the presentations, are on our website. We also have apps for iPads and Androids and so forth. What we're going to concentrate on here today is actually, I'm going to pull a section out of the system, and I'm going to concentrate on pre-retiree wealth building. But to begin talking about wealth building, we have to do a little bit of background here. And the reason why we're wealth building with pre-retirees is for what purpose? For retirement later on, right? What we have to then start with is that the functions of assets in retirement for everybody in this room and everybody in the nation are in order: income stream, liquidity, and legacy. The money we have created by the time we get to retirement is going to be used for one of these three functions in retirement. And it's kind of like a waterfall effect if you want to think it like that. When we enter retirement, we're all going to have the available assets, income streams, and life insurance that we've built on the day we enter retirement. We have to then use that money or those resources to first accomplish our income objective. And then whatever's left over can go to our liquidity legacy objectives. But think about it like this. Income then is really the linchpin of retirement. If I have, let's say you're entering retirement tomorrow and you have to have $200,000 a year to live on, and you set yourself up in a way where you have a choice to create income that could actually get you $400,000 a year from your assets, so you have an extra $200,000 a year of income. With that excess income potential, can't you create a lot of liquidity legacy value if you would like? Absolutely, right? Flip that around for a second though. Let's say you have to have $200,000 a year of income, but you've only set yourself up in a way with your biggest choice for income strategies at that time to get $100,000 a year of income. So you have $100,000 a year shortfall on lifestyle. Will there be any liquidity legacy to speak of for that type of individual? Absolutely not. You're going to have to exhaust everything just to get the income. So what you have to recognize here is that income is the linchpin. And so with a pre-retiree, I'm not trying to plan exactly what they're going to do on the day of retirement. What I'm trying to do is set up the resources they're going to have on the day of retirement so that they have the biggest choices available, first and foremost, to provide income streams to themselves. If we have provided by the highest income stream potential to them, we have by default given them the highest liquidity legacy potential. And so that's the connector between pre-retirees and retirees. So when we're working with pre-retirees, working with them in the wealth building area here, working with them on the concept of how do we position our assets along the way here so that we end up with the highest income choices on the day we enter retirement. And then the liquidity and legacy opportunities will follow. What I'm going to take us through here then is kind of it's a wealth building presentation that we go through the pre-retiree, or at least a piece of it. We start off with saying annual savings begins with wealth building. The question beyond saving money is how do you allocate it? And economically, three areas can be defined. One is for short-term wealth building, things like liquid assets. And you have to have these for emergencies and so forth throughout life. But the other question you have to ask yourself, and you might have to ponder for a second, is how would you economically define these two long-term wealth building areas? How does anybody go about at the age of 25, 35, 45, 55, or even 60, defining what these other two areas are for economic wealth building? The only way you could really solve that question or answer that question is to ask this question. What is the underlying premise for all long-term savings anybody does? What's the purpose of that long-term savings money? Why would I give up current enjoyment of my income today? Why won't I just spend it all? The answer is because I want to have an income stream later on in retirement. So it only makes sense then to understand how retirement income streams work in pre-retirement so we can direct the savings we're doing today in ways that gives us the highest income when we retire. In other words, how retirement income streams work economically defines how to allocate our savings today. The sooner you get on an efficient path, the greater the impact you have on the results. I will say, just from what we've all seen in this industry, there's not a lot of advisors out there who take this begin with a purpose in mind approach when it comes to actual wealth building. If you walk around the nation right now and you ask people who are contributing to their retirement plans why they do it, what would their knee-jerk response be? If you went up to any employee at a company that's saving to a 401k plan, for example, you said, hey, why do you contribute to your 401k? What would they say? For retirement, right? And I'd say, that's great. I like that you're saving for retirement, but then I'd follow that question up with another one. And I'd ask them, can you tell me how retirement income streams work? And how many of those people do you think could give me a plausible answer? None of them. That should be appalling to us in the financial services industry. One of the main reasons we're working with pre-retirees is so they can have retirement income later, yet none of our clients know how retirement income streams work. What we have to do is take a begin with a purpose in mind approach. And when you do that, you actually see everything unfold very clearly as to what should be laid out in pre-retirement and what products. And as I come back to this two economic powers discussion here shortly, you're going to see it's a combination of investment or growth type vehicles and insurance-based vehicles, because they represent two different economic powers that were supposed to be joined together from the beginning. So think of it like climbing a mountain. What's the objective? To get to the top of the mountain, or get to the top and make it back down safely? This is a simile for our financial lives, if you will. Getting up the mountain is our pre-retirement accumulation, getting back down is our retirement distribution. But what you have to realize is that this is one continuous journey. You get a do-over at the top of the mountain if you didn't bring the right supplies with you to make it back down safely. Will a helicopter come in and save you? Absolutely not. So what you have to recognize right away is when we're doing pre-retirement planning with people for wealth building, is understanding how retirement income streams work is going to define how to pack your bag in pre-retirement. You have to take a begin with a purpose in mind approach here. Otherwise, you can be doing stuff in pre-retirement and really have no idea what you're doing with it. There's no rhyme or reason to it because you don't know how the end game works. We like this little quote on the bottom. If you were going to climb a mountain, would you get a guide? What if the guide said to you that they were pretty sure they'd get you to the top of the mountain, but they weren't sure how to get back down? Would you use that guide or find a different one? That's exactly what this is all about here, is when we're doing pre-retiree wealth building, we really have to take this begin with a purpose in mind approach. What we do with our clients at this point, and again, this applies to anybody who's a pre-retiree, 25, 35, 45, 55, 60, anybody basically 3 or more years away from retirement is classified as a pre-retiree. we stick them at the top of the mountain here and we say, what are the two questions? So place yourself at the top of the mountain for a second. What are the two questions that every retiree is about to face when they enter retirement?
How much?
How much do I need to live on every year, right? And what's that immediately followed by?
How much less?
Can I pull that money from my assets without running out? Think about that. That's a daunting task, is it not? If you haven't thought about that till the day you get to retirement, do you think that's problematic? Absolutely. And so what we do is we place them up there and we go through a series of additional explanations as to what, how retirement income streams work. And I'm not going to go into a lot of detail on these. I'll probably get into them in my breakout session a little bit further. But what you have to recognize here is that there's two economic powers at play here, one for accumulation and one for distribution. The issue is today, in this today's day and age, everybody's only getting one economic power by default. They're getting what we call the interest rate power or the short-term fluctuating interest rate power or return power. The 401ks, mutual funds, when everybody starts working, what do they first start plugging their money into? Their qualified plans, right? That is a fluctuating return vehicle, which is fine. That's an interest rate power. That's an accumulation power. That's meant to get you growth of money. However, as we're seeing in front of us here, eventually we're going to have to distribute it. What happens when you use an economic power to do something it wasn't meant to do? What happens when you're putting a house together and use a hammer to do a saw's job? Is that very effective? In other words, the default path here for everybody today in our society is to use the accumulation rate to get up the mountain, and then you can continue to try to use the accumulation rate to get back down the mountain in distribution, which creates large problems for everybody here. This is well documented in all kinds of academic research and so forth. But the issue here becomes then, what is the default path? Because when you go from the left side of the mountain to the right side, the rules as to how your money reacts to ups and downs and fluctuation changes when you're withdrawing income, does it not? Very much so, right? So the default path to try to solve that problem are Monte Carlo simulations or withdrawal rate simulations. Is everybody in the room, I'm assuming, familiar with withdrawal rate simulations and the thousands of simulations they run, what they're testing historically? Is your probabilities of running out of money years into retirement based on the income rate you chose off the beginning asset? So I want to stress here for a second, as we look at this chart, that those far right rates that you see there, the 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, and 8%, those are not interest rates. This is the day you enter retirement, and you're trying to determine how much income to pull from a fluctuating return asset. Why can't they be interest rates? If it's a fluctuating return asset, do you have any idea what it's going to return every year into the future? That's exactly why these things exist, is the problem is you don't know what you're going to earn on fluctuating return assets into the future. But what's the big issue here for a retiree? What do they have to set that's going to have to last them for the next 30 years prior to knowing what they're going to earn in their, as a rate of return? Their income rate, right? They actually have to try to set their income rate before knowing what they're going to earn on their money. That's a pretty daunting task in a fluctuating return world. What you'd have to do then, and the only way you can possibly do this, is to use probabilities historically of making it. And so what these things do is they run hundreds of thousands of simulations throughout history during all kinds of interest rate environments. High ones, low ones, positives, negatives. They recognize in some years you're going to earn positive 10, negative 20, positive 15, positive 30, whatever it is. They're running thousands of these. And what they're doing is giving you probabilities of making historically based on fluctuating returns throughout history, years into retirement. So if you look at the 8% line, that orange line there, what it's saying is 30 years into retirement, a person who chose an 8% income rate off of $1 million, which is 80 grand a year at the beginning of retirement, has a 5% chance of having any of their money left 30 years down the road historically. So it doesn't take a rocket, so they've had a 95% chance of running out of money historically 30 years down the road at that income rate in a fluctuating return asset. So it doesn't take a rocket scientist to tell us if we lower our income rate up to, say, 3 or 4%, do our chances get better of making it? Yeah, because I just cut my lifestyle in half, right? So the way you read this chart for, say, a 4% curve is you have an 85% chance of not running out of money years into retirement, but you've had a 15% chance of running out of money still. The other thing you really have to watch on these curves is you see how they keep going down over time, even at like a 3 or a 4% withdrawal rate? What does that tell you is happening to the majority of people's assets that are drawing 4% and still haven't run out of money by year 30? Are they increasing or decreasing?
Decreasing.
They have to be, right? How could my chances of increasing, of running out of money increase the longer I live if on a majority level we have an increasing asset base? So even as you draw the 3 to 4% on a majority basis, you have a slowly depleting asset base. 15% ran out of money. 15% actually can increase their asset base historically. There are people who are able to increase their asset size if they retired in a good interest rate environment, even at drawing 4%. But what you see in the middle of that whole group there, of the 15% that ran out and the 15% that were able to accumulate more, is you have the 70% in the middle that have a slowly decreasing asset base as they move forward. They're just hoping their assets don't run out before they do. And so it's very important to understand this default problem here that we're all faced with. Everybody's default path these days is to get the interest rate of return power, the short-term fluctuating return power, whatever you want to call it, the accumulation power, on the day they start working. But the day they retire, they don't know that there's a different power they now have to come into play there to complete the distribution. And so what you have is everybody trying to use this accumulation power now for distribution later, and it really just doesn't work. So this is the attempted solution for pulling income from assets that are in fluctuating return world. And I'm just going to read it. Withdrawal rate simulations might solve the issue of running out of money, but they create another issue that 3 to a 4% income rate is often not a feasible solution, because it'll be very difficult to build the amount of assets necessary to have an adequate income stream in retirement. Think about that for a second. If $1 million can only produce 30 to 40 grand a year of income, with still the possibility of running out of money, right? By the way, right? How much assets? Think about a person making $150,000 today combined income, saving 10% of their money at the age of 45. With inflation, that income in 20 years needs to be about 300 grand. What are the chances that they're going to have created $9 to $10 million in their qualified plan, saving 10% a year off of 150 grand so they can replace their lifestyle in retirement? Does anybody see a mathematical problem there? My point is that this is the default path. What the issue is isn't the accumulation of money. At large, our society for the last 100 years has been accumulating money in very similar ways. Yeah, there's different interest rate environments, they go up and down and all that stuff. The issue isn't the accumulation of money. The issue is the distribution rate you're setting yourself up for by default. Because really, 7 to 13% income rates are what most likely be needed to achieve adequate income based on what's actually attainable for retirement asset amounts. The question, though, is how do you do that without high probabilities of running out of money? How do I set myself up to have these types of income rate potentials at retirement time without having gigantic probabilities of running out of money? Because if I'm on these curves trying to pull 7 to 13%, how does that look? Pretty awful from a probability perspective, right? So how do we do this? What's the solution? And the solution is this two economic powers approach. The first economic power we've just talked through is the interest rate of return power. And think of this as the accumulation power. The second power that's always existed in our society from the very beginning is the actuarial science power. This actuarial science power is built for distribution. Who creates actuarial science? Can individuals create actuarial science? Only insurance companies can create actuarial science, because what they're doing is taking the pool of large numbers to create certainty. One of the lines in this description here is that actuarial science applies the mathematics of probability and statistics to define, analyze, and solve the financial implications of uncertain future events. How do you make an uncertain event in the future certain? Volume. On a large pool of people, does each individual know when they're going to die? As a group, do they all know when they're going to die? Life expectancy, age 85. That is a huge benefit to know the day you're going to die from a planning perspective. I'm not saying you're dying that day. I'm saying you get to use that age to determine your income rates at retirement time if you do this properly, versus planning on life potential to say age 100, because it's never acceptable to run out of money. When you get that type of power, that distribution power in play with the actuarial science, it's extremely powerful. Many people used to get both of these powers incorporated into the long-term wealth building for retirement income by default through pension plans. As defined contribution plans became more popular now, fewer and fewer people have defined benefit pension plans. If you think about it, our society was really built off of a two economic power system. The origins of our society and our salaries in the 1900s all came from a salary plus pension system. Prior to the 1980s, like 80% of all employees had pensions through their employers. Is a pension a cost to an employer? Yeah, right? Does that impact what they can pay them as a salary? The total cost of an employee, right? Meaning, under a two economic power system, your salaries were actually being set off of the ability to have this distribution power later on. In the 1980s, for example, when the 401k type plans all came on the scene and are now very prevalent today, did anybody get a $30,000 raise when their company switched over from a pension plan to a contribution plan? Did they pass the savings back to them for not having to contribute to the pension plan anymore? No, it didn't happen. But my point to that discussion is that our society, from a completion of retirement income perspective, was always built off of these two economic powers working together, and our incomes were set in that way from the very beginning. And they're still set that way today. What you're gonna see is when you combine these two powers back together properly in balance as soon as possible and start building them in balance, you can recreate the same income streams and lifestyle and retirement that you're accustomed to. Because that it's not coincidental. That's the way it was built from the very beginning of time in our society. All we're doing now, and this is my belief as a financial advisor and insurance agent, what I'm doing at large when I'm talking about this topic here is I'm bringing back the power into people's financial lives that is now missing by default. Very few people even understand that this exists, and fewer people understand how to actually use it properly. Who bears the risk of accumulation and distribution for an employee's retirement income under a defined benefit plan? Is it the employer or the employee? Oops, sorry. The employer. Who bears it under a defined contribution plan? Employee. So there's a major transfer of risk and responsibility from the employer to the employee when you have a contribution plan versus a benefit plan. Very little education was given to individuals regarding that what they now must do to provide for themselves, though. Equally important is not only was there a transfer of risk and responsibility that occurred, but in defined contribution plan, the employee is no longer getting both economic powers by default. They're getting the interest rate rate of return power, but they must now seek out and understand how to incorporate the actuarial science power because they're not getting it by default. The gateway to the actuarial science power in pre-retirement is permanent life insurance. Without it, people are going to be relegated to an interest rate of return power only world. But here's the thing here, is either economic power by itself is equally ineffective. You don't want to be having too much of either of these powers. They were meant to perfectly balance each other. And inside of pension plans, they used to balance each other perfectly from the very beginning. They were married together right from the start. When we all reach retirement, there's two global options for generating income from the assets we've built. And there's only two global options, by the way. You and I and everybody else are either going to trade or exchange our money, meaning I'm going to take my lump sum and say give it to an insurance company in exchange for a guaranteed income stream. That's one option, is I can exchange my lump sum at retirement time to get my income. If I don't choose to exchange my money to get my income, what's my only other option? To invest it, right? Meaning there's only two options. If I'm not going to exchange it, then I'm taking on the risk myself to try to get the income streams by earning rates of return on my own. And what we're not trying to do today is pigeonhole somebody. Meaning at the age of 35, 45, 55, whatever, I don't want to have to pick exactly what I'm going to do on the age of retirement at age 65, let's say, or whenever it is. I want to have the choice between these two at the highest capacity. Think of it like a spectrum. On one end of the spectrum, I want the exchange trade option. On the other end of the spectrum, I want the investing option. And I want to be able to pick one over the other later on or mix and match the two together in the middle anywhere I want. What I don't want is to end up on the bottom spectrum at the 3 to 4% income rates, because that will never work. You can really never accumulate enough money to make that work. So if we don't incorporate actuarial science, we've relegated or defaulted ourselves to investing our money for income and retirement at low income rates based on withdrawal rate simulation probabilities. The balancing these economic powers is the key. Having too much of either will make you less efficient, and this is shown through the calculations we do in the Cornerstones calculator for individual clients. So when you balance the economic powers, you're going to get both income options later on. You don't have to choose one today. Just because you've balanced the actuarial science power with the rate of return power along the way, you're going to get a trading option. We call it the covered assets. Or you're going to get an investing option that we call a volatility buffer option. And you get them in equal capacity, and you get to choose between them or combine them together at retirement. You don't have to pick today. The presentations and the calculator are meant to show how these things are supposed to work together. The balancing between retirement asset building and permanent life insurance building is the key here. And when we balance it and we get these options at retirement time, what happens is we take people through the exact concepts. And I think in the small group I'm going to do, I'll actually go through exactly what the definition of a covered asset is and a volatility buffer is. But for now, just know that one is a trading option and the other is an investing option. The covered asset option actually is a combination of using permanent life insurance with annuities. The volatility buffer option is using investments that are going to have fluctuating returns every year with the uncorrelated cash values of your permanent life policy. Together, you can have both options available. So what we do with a client is we take them through exactly how these two strategies work. And our Cornerstones calculator then, for every single client, we run them through here. And what it's doing is it's comparing the one economic power approach path, the retirement assets only salmon color there. This is an age 40 example here called Sam and Jane going to age 65. And under the regular default path, they're just gonna keep saving money to their interest rate of return power and end up at a 3.5% income rate from Monte Carlo later on. That income is $90,000 a year of income then based on what they're saving today and the assumptions we're making for returns. We take the exact same assumptions then, same interest rates, tax rates, everything. It's a science experiment. We're not changing variables. What we're doing is changing allocations of savings so we can get a balance between building retirement assets and permanent life insurance. We're not even adding any more savings. We're just taking the same $20,000 or whatever it is a year they're saving and splitting it to build a proper balance between these two powers. And when you get that balance going, you have the choice between the blue option and the green option, the covered asset trading exchanging option, at 149 grand a year of income later on, or the volatility buffer investing option at 149 grand a year of income later on. You get to choose between these, but either one of those is a 63 or 64% increase above the regular strategy. That's pretty substantial. Another 60 grand a year of income, that's pretty good. And so with this system, we have unprecedented academic scientific support for the top two planning strategies, the covered asset and the volatility buffer. Dr. Wade Pfau just wrote a paper here recently that was published earlier this year. Has anybody heard of Dr. Wade Pfau in the group here? So he's a professor at the American College, PhD from Princeton. He writes some of the curriculum for the different types of designations at the American College, like the RICP and so forth. This paper came about about a year and a half ago. One of our licensees was actually working with Dr. Pfau on personal planning, and he was going through our system. After getting through our system, we got a call in November saying Dr. Pfau was interested in writing a paper on this covered asset strategy. So we met with him and went through the different aspects of the strategy and the details of the calculations and so forth. And then the paper that was just written here came out about 3 months ago. It's called Optimizing Retirement Income by Combining Actuarial Science and Investments. He actually wrote a paper, a side letter to this for us on American College letterhead that Wade Pfau signed. It says, I've reviewed the covered asset strategy of the Wealth Building Cornerstone System and conclude that it's consistent with the strategy named Scenario 3 in my paper. And so this is the results. This is a 40-page document or something. And he ran two different simulations for a 35-year-old and a 50-year-old. I'm just going to highlight the 35-year-old here for a second. This is the outcome. What he's doing here is you'll see this is a 35-year-old. Their current 401k savings in balance is 65 grand. They're saving $15,000 a year right now towards that. So what he's going to do now is test three scenarios against each other on hundreds of thousands of simulations going forward. And what he's going to do is scenario one, the strategy from now until retirement was to buy term insurance and invest the difference and then do Monte Carlo simulations at the end to get your income streams and your legacies. So you'll see there the breakdown of what scenario one was. Scenario two was buy term and invest the difference and then do a joint life SPIA at retirement time. So not using Monte Carlo income at retirement, but taking the lump sum and trading it. And actually, the reason scenario two is in this thing is because a few years ago, there was a paper written by some academics that took the 10 or 12 mainstream type of planning approaches in the industry that people might be using in pre-retirement to try to prepare for retirement income later on. And what they were doing was they're doing hundreds of thousands of simulations on these different types of strategies from now until retirement for income. And what came out of that, they measured just about everything. They went by term and invested difference with Monte Carlo at the end, doing income annuity or growth annuities with income riders. And the best one that came out of that study at that time, at large, was buy term and invest the difference and then do a joint life SPIA at the end. So that's the reason why number two is in here, because now we actually get to compare the covered assets, which is scenario three, where we're doing investments and permanent life insurance in pre-retirement, which sets us up for a single life SPIA at retirement time. So again, we're not fighting the investment industry here at all. We're saying let's build permanent life insurance and investments at the same time. And in this case, he used whole life as the permanent life tool. You don't necessarily have to do that. It's just the tool he chose to use. And what you'll see are the results here. The distribution of income at 65, you have the 10th percentile, median, and 90th percentile. And I'm just going to stick with the median here, where the buy term and invest the difference Monte Carlo strategy scenario one produced $58,000 of income at the median. Scenario two, with a joint SPIA at the end, 81 grand. Scenario three, 82 grand of income. So if you look at these, you would say scenario two and three are very similar. Well, you can't stop here, though. You have to go down now to what the legacies are. So scenario one produced 649 at the median of legacy. Scenario two, 217. And scenario three had 2 million at a median level. So you got the same income as scenario two did, but you had 10 times more legacy. That's pretty powerful, isn't it? This, as an academic study, this came out and just said, this is it. Here it is. Now, what could he, in this paper, the comparison actually washed out in the legacy values. But if we wanted to wash out in the income levels, couldn't we have just pushed down on the legacy and created more income in option three? Couldn't I have just decided I didn't want as much legacy and started pulling more income from those assets instead? Absolutely, and I probably could have come close to maybe getting up to 140 grand a year of income then if I equated the legacies instead of the incomes. So this strategy of the covered assets is fully documented in an unprecedented matter here, really, as one of the top planning strategies. This is the exchanging trading option if we want that later on. But again, we don't want to be pigeonholed. So the next thing we have are what are called volatility buffer withdrawal rate simulations for the investment option. So this green option on the bottom here states you got 149 grand a year of income from your investments. The reason that's happening is you can pull a higher rate of income than 3 to 4% from those investments in this strategy because you have it buffered by the uncorrelated cash values of your permanent life insurance policy. And you're going to get anywhere between 3 and 9 years of buffer when you have a balance. This one shows 5, which is pretty typical. But what that does is it totally changes the probabilities of making it on those curves. See, if you're going to choose to use investments as income source in retirement, and you're going to have to pull high income rates to be able to meet lifestyle needs, you have to find a way to be able to pull those high income rates but have lower probabilities of running out of money. Did anybody think the 8% Monte Carlo curve that we were looking at before looked like a good path for anybody? No, the chances are horrible, right? So if we're going to be pulling 8, 9, 10, 12%, or 7, what we need to do is find a way to get those probabilities higher. And the way you do that is by having a totally different economic source of cash, a different economic power-based source of cash that has no link to the short-term fluctuating returns of the invested retirement money. I'm talking about the actuarial science-driven cash values of permanent life insurance. And when those two match up, one economic power cannot effectively buffer itself. When those two line up, you now have the ability to play them off of one another. One of the reasons why these curves get so bad at higher income rates is because you never get to take a break from pulling your money out of this asset, if this is all you have, right? If the market doesn't do well in a given year, guess what? You still have to pull your income the next year and create a double whammy on the actual asset base. Then the next year, there aren't as many workers there to earn returns for you again, and you have to pull your income again. The problem here is that you have to preserve your workers in the beginning of retirement. There's studies out there that show, which if you're going to choose an investment option entering retirement, the first 10 years are critical If you get lousy returns or even mediocre returns, your chances of making it 30 years into retirement can be very bad. And the reason that occurs is because you're killing your workers off so fast. Your dollars are getting diminished, and they're not there to replenish anymore on the interest rates you may earn in the future. So what you have to do is keep those workers alive in the beginning, but have a totally different economic-powered source of cash. And so what I'm going to do now is I'm going to show you what happens to these probabilities and these income rate lines as we incorporate years of buffer, meaning how many times could I draw the income I'm going to pull from the actual cash values of my permanent life insurance if I needed to. If my workers started to get killed off, how many times can I pull the investment income, actually stop that and pull it from my cash values instead? That's what a year of buffer is. So watch what happens to this 8% curve here. And maybe just take note of where it is on the 25-year retirement right now. It has a 10% chance of making it. With just 3 years of buffer, which is the minimum somebody would have, that 8% line goes from a 10% chance of making it to a 75% chance. That's pretty solid, isn't it? That's a pretty high big difference in probabilities right there. As I add more years of buffer, so this is 4 years of buffer, 5, 6, and 5 to 6 is where most people will end up. What you're seeing is these income rates you're basically getting double the income rate with the same probabilities of before. That's pretty powerful in the investment industry. I'm not saying this is guaranteed. Can I guarantee anything in the investment world? No, but if I'm going to choose this option, I have to find a way to take higher income rates at lower probabilities of running out of money just to have a chance. If I want guarantees, I go to option one. But if I'm not going to take the guarantees through the exchanging option, I got to have a way to invest my money and get my income rates that are going to give me a lifestyle that matters. And again, so we have all these simulations as part of our system here that are part of the presentations. But you get both of these options. So what we're doing with a client, and these calculations look the same or work the same for every client we work with, whether you're 25, 35, 45, 55, whether you have $500,000 in assets or $10 million, the results of these things are always the same, relatively speaking, because all these economic powers apply to everybody equally. We're not measuring variables here. We're measuring how these economic powers work together. It transcends all these variables everybody talks about all day long, like changes in tax rates, changes in interest rates. The economic powers transcend all of that. And so as we do this, the choice with a client, as we're just looking at the end of this process and saying, what do you want to do? Do you want to keep going down the one economic power approach path, or do you want to go down the two economic power approach path and have the choice between the blue and the green options later on? It's up to you. It's a very powerful point to get to with a client from an implementation perspective. And come back to that. This Cornerstone's calculator is what creates these outputs. We call it lovingly the mother of all pre-retiree calculators, because you can put any scenario you want in here. Annual savings, how should I allocate existing money? You can see the impact of existing permanent life insurance during reviews, cost of waiting for years of implementation, college savings, mortgage payments. It actually is a buy term and invest the rest calculator. That's what the default path is for people. That salmon color, the default path right now is to buy term and invest the difference. Quote unquote. That's what it is. That is a salmon colored path. This one calculator does it all because it's measuring the actual objective of the savings being retirement income. You have to be measuring the objective. There's no more powerful point of sale, and it's common to everybody. And it's the actual reason we're all saving the money. Why would I spend time measuring anything else when I have the most powerful thing sitting right in front of me? So we're balancing these two economic powers along the way, and permanent life insurance is the gateway. And the production results with this are huge. You get increases in both the assets and in the life insurance world because of the overall economic-based planning you're doing with somebody that's so powerful. Increases are substantial into practices. And so what I want to do right now, just real quick, is close with a video we have for licensees to use. That's a short video called The Retirement Savings Dilemma. We use this in our emails or websites, and a lot of times we'll just play it at the beginning of an actual meeting to set the tone for the meeting.
So you're thinking about your retirement, an exciting yet scary proposition. Two crucial questions have probably crossed your mind. How much do we need to save, and where do we need to put it? To answer these questions, you must remember why you're saving money long-term in the first place. You want to have an income stream in retirement. Think of it like climbing a mountain. What's the objective? Getting to the top? Well, not really. The ultimate objective is really to get to the top and then make it back down safely. In the context of your financial life, getting up the mountain is your pre-retirement accumulation phase. Getting back down is your retirement distribution phase. This is one continuous journey. You can't call in a helicopter at the top of the mountain if you didn't bring sufficient supplies to make it down safely. To figure out where to put your savings in pre-retirement, you must understand how the distribution phase works. How retirement income streams work defines how to pack your bags in pre-retirement. Many people haven't had the opportunity to look at it from this perspective, which can be very costly. Back when pension plans were the norm, retirement planning for individuals used to be more automatic. Pension plans put the responsibility of providing you retirement income in the hands of your employer. Typically, your pension amount was comparable to a good percentage of your salary. Pension plans automatically took into account both the accumulation of money and the distribution of it for retirement income. Around the 1980s, things started to change significantly. As retirement plans, like 401ks, were introduced, they started to become the norm. These types of plans meant employees became more responsible for providing retirement income for themselves. 401k-type plans focus mainly on accumulation of money and not on distribution. When used alone, they can be very inefficient for creating retirement income streams later. For example, to avoid potentially running out of money in retirement, financial research recommends withdrawing only 3-4% from these types of invested retirement assets every year to live on. These relatively low distribution rates can be problematic. Think about it. You'd need $1 million at retirement to create just $30,000 to $40,000 a year of retirement income. What about adding inflation to your current income? $100,000 of income today needs to be $180,000 in 20 years at 3% inflation just to maintain spending power. This would require the accumulation of approximately $5 million by retirement time. How feasible does this path sound running your own numbers? Is this the path you would want to stay on if you had a choice? See, the problem in many cases isn't the accumulation of money in retirement plans, but rather the low distribution rate we could be on track for, if that's all we do. What if today you could put yourself on a path that provides higher distribution rates from the retirement assets you're accumulating? Then $1 million could potentially create $70,000 to $130,000 a year of retirement income. How? By knowing how retirement income streams work, so you can take action now in pre-retirement to position your savings accordingly. Get off the default path of low distribution rates and contact us today to learn about saving for your retirement income. You'll be glad you did.
And with that, everybody, I'd like to thank you guys for having me here. It's been great, so I appreciate it. I'm honored to be here. Thank you very much.